Last night you may have seen a Spider-Man or a Mickey Mouse at your front door, maybe a Dora the Explorer or SpongeBob SquarePants. Characters so familiar, so iconic, so heavily marketed. Yet when American cartoons travel overseas, many characters find themselves reinvented to fit local cultural expectations. If you've seen these transformations, what did you think? Or if you have questions about the how and why of these makeovers, give us a call, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org, and you can join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Craig McCracken witnessed the makeover of cartoon characters firsthand. He's the creator of the Powerpuff Girls, and he joins us today from the Cartoon Network Studios in Burbank, California. Nice to have you on the program.
Thanks.
And as I understand it, the regular version of Powerpuff Girls, the ones that Americans are familiar with, well, they didn't do that well in Japan.
Well, from what I understand is the way Western programming airs in Japan is they can't really air on the main networks. They basically air on like satellite or terrestrial television. So it didn't really get the kind of wide audience that just programs that are made in Asia usually get.
The market so penetration is, I think they call that.
Yeah. It wasn't really as exposed as big as it could be.
But you would think, I mean, just looking at the Powerpuff Girls, that they seem to have been at least in part inspired by Japanese anime.
Yeah, some of it, a lot of the action sequences that we had in the show were definitely inspired by anime, but the characters themselves are really inspired by Margaret and Walter Keane paintings from the 60s, if you are familiar with those.
Sure, the very big eyes.
Yeah. It was a kind of combination between them and, like, you know, Jay Ward-type cartooning stuff. But we always had, like, anime influence within our action sequences and stuff.
And so then it was decided that maybe if they had a slightly different look, and it turned out to be not so slightly different, they might do better in Japan.
Yeah. And some of the Asian networks came to us and said they wanted to produce their own version of Powerpuff Girls, and they felt it could do well, but it needed to be done and produced by an Asian studio, and said, like, you know, then we can air it on like TV Tokyo or whatever.
And how did that change them?
They just really wanted to re-envision the property. And when the idea was first pitched to me, the first thing I thought of was Batman. I mean, here's a character that's been reinterpreted so many different ways, from the original Bob Kane version to the Adam West version to the Frank Miller version. And they all, at its core, are still Batman. The foundation of the character is still the same. So I said, well, as long as you keep that core foundation the same, you know, feel free to reinterpret it or reimagine it in a way that you feel is going to better play in your marketplace.
And they come out being a lot less abstract. They look like, well, not like real girls, but a lot more like real girls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think maybe one reason that was is because things like fashion is such a big component of in Japan, and they thought, well, you know, these tiny little bodies that I gave them, they really couldn't kind of dress them as well as they could if they kind of stretched them out and made them, you know, much more a little human proportioned.
And so girls in Japan will buy the same clothes that the Powerpuff Girls wear?
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, maybe. Or it's just, you know, it's just they get more diverse things in the drawing. You know, they can have street clothes and then their superhero outfits and various different things. And it's just like another visual element that they feel is important to their type of programming.
And if you saw them, if you just happened to turn on your TV and saw them, would you recognize them?
Yeah, the main designs are still the same. You know, the Blossom's a redhead and Buttercup's a brunette, and, you know, Bubbles has, you know, the blonde pigtails. And so iconically, they still feel the same.
Hmm. Well, stay with us. Joining us now is Amy Chosik, who wrote about altering cartoons in a recent Wall Street Journal article, Cartoon Characters Get Big Makeover for Overseas Fans. She's with us from our bureau in New York City. Nice to have you on the line.
Hi, nice to be here. Thanks.
And it's not just the Powerpuff Girls who get transformed when they go abroad.
That's right. More and more media companies are seeing this transcreation, as they call it, as necessary to make their properties really resonate overseas.
I'll give us some other examples, if you would.
Well, some other examples. Sesame Street, when they launched well, Sesame Street has been in India for a while, but they recently replaced Big Bird with Boomba, a Bhangra dancing lion, which is a type of dance popular in Bollywood movies. In South Africa, Sesame Street has an HIV-positive Muppet. Mattel realized recently that 8 out of 10 Japanese girls found American Barbie ugly, so they came out with a cuter version with brown hair and round eyes and kind of look that would be more typical of something that Japanese kids would find attractive.
And I was fascinated by your example of the Disney characters in China, a place where kids did not grow up with our traditional images of Mickey and Minnie.
That's right. This is fascinating. This is a company that is so careful about its copyrights that, you know, it still has Western women playing Cinderella and Snow White in Hong Kong Disney World and in Tokyo Disney, yet it's come out with a line of cuties, which is a line of kind of taking the Hello Kitty aesthetic of a little tiny mouth and kind of a smushier face that is popular across Asia and launched that in China and Japan and elsewhere.
And it's been enormously successful.
It is. It's a huge seller, especially in China, where these kids didn't grow up with regular Mickey, as you said.
And another character who's undergone quite a transformation, or a number of them, Spider-Man.
Oh, yes. Spider-Man came back. Peter Parker came back as Patvir Prakabar in India. And rather than gaining his power from a radioactive spider, he gets his power from a mysterious yogi. And he sports a loincloth when he's fighting crime.
Does it have a spider pattern on it?
It might, actually.
Uh-huh. I have to check into that.
Yes.
And where does he keep his web? Anyway. And we're talking with Amy Chozick, who's a foreign correspondent for The Wall Street Journal, and Craig McCracken, who's the creator of the Powerpuff Girls. If you'd like to join us in a conversation about how and why these characters are transformed when they go abroad, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. And let's talk with Michael, who's on the line with us from Ann Arbor in Michigan.
Hi, I love your show. I just want to say that I watched the Japanese version of Powerpuff Girls, and one of the things I noticed was that Bubbles, one of her attacks was called Bubble Champagne, and I was wondering why they decided to call it Champagne. You know, it's a little girl.
Uh-huh. Craig McCracken, do you have any idea?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the caller.
He was saying that he watched the Japanese version of the Powerpuff Girls, and one of her attacks, is that right? Bubbles' attacks is called Bubbles Champagne?
I believe so, yeah. In PPGZ, the girls are actually given weapons, and so you know, they've got various different weapons that they use to fight crime with. That my version, the girls just were kind of like Superman. You know, they would just kind of fly around and beat up people, but they didn't have any real accessories.
And so, in the Japanese version, they have accessories like this champagne bubble generator.
Yeah.
Maybe she should have talked to Lawrence Welk.
Yeah, and well, one thing with the PPGZ program is once we did the initial development on it, I kind of gave them my blessing and said, you know, you guys can go off and make this show. So I'm not really involved in the daily production of that show and supervising things and kind of giving my comments on it. I was really just there in the initial conception of it.
Mm-hmm. And one of the ideas was, if you wanted to make it fly in Asia, you better turn this creative end of it over to Asians.
Yeah. And one big issue that we did deal with the show is when they first pitched their concept, the character of Professor Utonium wasn't in it. And they just had it was three girls, you know, out fighting crime. And I said, well, they really need a father figure. They really need someone to look after them. And it didn't – and they thought it was weird. They said, well, isn't it strange that there's a single father with three daughters? And I didn't realize it was a cultural thing in Asia where the idea of a single father who – possibly, you know, has been divorced or, you know, whose wife has passed away, that typically in those situations a husband would remarry or, you know, the children would go with the mother. And so they were, you know, real resistant to having them be their actual biological father. But I said they at least need a father figure in the show.
So is he now back in the show in some other slightly different capacity?
Yeah, he is back in the show as just a kind of parental figure.
Uh-huh. All right. I guess they didn't see Charlie's Angels too much either.
Right.
Okay. Thanks very much for the call, Michael.
Well, but I was wondering, why was it like, do you have any idea why it was like, you know, because it's about alcohol, you know, and why is a little girl using like an alcohol attack or whatever?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean, one thing we did try to stress with the producers is that we want to try to keep PPGZ as a kid's show. I mean, there's a lot of anime that's produced that's very much for adults, and we understand that there's a market for that, but we wanted to make sure that PPGZ was still predominantly for kids, and I really wasn't familiar with the champagne attack. Like I said, you know, I had kind of just been involved peripherally in the beginning of the show.
Mm. Thanks for the call, Michael. Here's an email, this from Tom in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. I retired from the U.S. Department of State after 25 years and lived overseas most of my life. Excluding some fundamentalist Muslim countries, the USA is the most sexually conservative country in the world. No surprise, the Powerpuff Girls are more muted here than almost anywhere else. I wonder, Amy Chozick, what you think about that?
Well, that's interesting. Yeah, some readers responded, that's too bad the Powerpuff Girls look like Barbies in Japan. But mm-hmm. I think that that just plays into the kind of the taste for animation there, and also the appeal that it has towards grown men, which Craig was speaking about. Otaku in Japan are also called geeks, are very into animation, and they like this aesthetic of the long legs and the doe-eyed girls.
We're talking about the transcreation, that's the term of art, transcreation of cartoon characters as they go overseas. Our guests are Amy Chozick of the Wall Street Journal and Craig McCracken, the creator of the Powerpuff Girls. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. This is the Talk of the Nation, coming to you from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Carrie. Carrie with us from Oak Park in Illinois.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
You know, I was riding a minibus one day in Beijing, and there was this toddler next to me, and she started saying, yeah, 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 which is the word for grandfather. And her mother said, what grandfather? Who do you see? She was pointing to Colonel Sanders outside Kentucky Fried Chicken, who they call Grandfather Kentucky, you know. And also Ronald McDonald over there is Uncle McDonald, because, you know, you just have to have some kind of family relationship, I guess, as opposed to some random guy trying to sell you something.
Huh. Have you noticed that, Amy Chozick?
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, Colonel Sanders takes on many images in Asia, but in terms of transcreation, I really haven't noticed that, but that's interesting.
Interesting. Carrie, sounds like you've got some young consumers of your own to take care of.
Yeah, you know, I gave her some Cheerios. I was hoping she'd be quiet, but...
Yeah. It's just because the Powerpuff Girls aren't on. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's see if we can go to... this is Terry. Terry's with us from McAllister in Oklahoma.
Yes. Hello. My name is Terry. Thank you for taking my call. I was just curious to know why the change of the Looney Tunes characters, you know, here in the United States, we used to have the traditional forms, I guess, of cartooning, and now they've changed it to this more sleek, gothic kind of Japanese animation, and it's kind of odd that they would show it here in the United States. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. That may be more an industrial question than an artistic one necessarily. Craig McCracken, what do you think?
I think she's referring to a program that Kids WD produced called Lunatics Unleashed. And I think that was just really just an attempt, from Warner Brothers to try to breathe some new life into the Warner's characters. Hopefully, you know, because I'm a big fan of the classics, they weren't trying to replace them. Hopefully it was just like an attempt to see, almost like a transcreation here, just to see, will kids like them better if they're edgier.
And move their demographic a little younger, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure what it was. I mean, I haven't seen anything of that show for a long time. And, you know, just as a fan of the classics, I'm kind of happy that Bugs Bunny still has a place as the, you know, the comedic character that I, you know and love. And
yeah. By the way, listeners can see how the Powerpuff Girls were transformed for Japanese fans if they go to npr.org/talk. And it's interesting, Amy Chozick, that there are some characters for whom this was either not necessary or that it didn't work. For one reason
right.
or another.
Exactly. Some characters just ended up kind of transcreating themselves. Dora the Explorer, for instance, when she went to China, Chinese kids thought, oh, she looks Chinese. She looks like me. So they Nickelodeon kind of did away with her Hispanic heritage, and now she teaches English to Chinese kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's SpongeBob, who everybody said would flop in Japan, where they like round characters with tiny eyes and non-existent mouths like Hello Kitty. And here's SpongeBob with huge eyes and a huge mouth and kind of an irritating personality, and he's a huge hit. 2 million households tune in to watch him on Saturdays. So sometimes things creep in under the radar.
And it's also some characters can't be changed, including, for example, any of the Peanuts characters.
Oh, exactly. This is serious stuff. Any of the Peanuts are restricted from being recreated. And the Times of India decided that Snoopy should be brown, so they had been coloring Snoopy brown. And when the Wall Street Journal inquired about this, The the United Media, which controls Peanuts, said it was a coloring error that would be fixed. So Snoopy is now white in the Times of India.
Here's an email we have from Roger in Portland, Oregon. The localization of the cartoon sounds like Joseph Campbell's idea, Hero with a Thousand Faces. What is the common message that resonates with these diverse audiences? And I wonder if you've thought about that, Craig McCracken.
Well, you know, the one thing we always try to put in Powerpuff Girls is and like, and speaking back to Professor Utonium, is our characters, they're superheroes and they have these powers, but they still have responsibilities of, you know, normal children. They have to listen to their parents. And so I think it's just at the heart of these characters, despite of how broad they are, the exceptional things they can do, they're human beings and they deal with the same kind of, you know, problems that other human beings do. And I think that's why you can – you know, cross cultures and different countries can appeal the same fundamental foundation of the characters appeal to everybody, because people are people everywhere.
Yeah, and I wonder, Amy Chozick, if you've thought about that, why a sponge who lives in a pineapple underneath the sea would do just as well in Tokyo as he does in New York.
Exactly. Well, as Nickelodeon says, when they created it from the beginning, there's very little about SpongeBob that is American or is even of the 90s or of a period. You know, he lives in this undersea world. So I think maybe characters that are universally weird can appeal universally.
There's hope for us all, then.
I guess so.
Amy Chozick, thank you very much for being with us
today.
Thank you. Amy Chozick, foreign correspondent for The Wall Street Journal. You can find a link to her article, Cartoon Characters Get Big Makeover for Overseas Fans, at npr.org/blogofthenation. And Craig McCracken, thank you very much for being with us, and good luck with your characters.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Craig McCracken is the creator of the Powerpuff Girls and joined us from the Cartoon Network studios in Burbank, California. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.